So I think for I speak for most of us when I say that for the last couple of weeks, pretty much we haven't been able to think about anything other than the really terrible attack on our brothers and sisters in Israel and the looming darkness that lies ahead. Will Durant said that barbarianism, like the jungle, never dies out, but it only retreats behind the barriers that civilization has thrown up against it. And it waits there always to reclaim that to which civilization has temporarily laid claim. And I think that's what we all saw on October 7th. Just pure evil and barbarianism asserting itself from behind the walls that we, the Jewish people, have set up over the last 75 years to try to destroy the civilization that we've built not just in the last century, but over the last two millennia. I don't know about you guys, but for me personally, every time there's an opportunity to watch a clip of the heinous evil that was perpetrated, I seize the opportunity. The video clips, the pictures are very dark. They'll keep you up at night. But in my opinion, that's really the only way to understand Zachar Eis Asher Asal Cha Amalek, to understand the type of evil that people have perpetrated and continue to perpetrate against the Jewish people in our day. I was born in 1989, about 33 or 34 years ago, and I don't think there's ever been a devastating attack against Jews like this in my lifetime. If you read the newspapers, they'll say this is the worst attack against Jews since the Holocaust. But I think there's almost something deeper and more tragic about the October 7th attack, the fact that it's an attack against the sovereign homeland of the Jewish people, that makes it more urgent and more egregious than what even was perpetrated against the Jews in Eastern Europe. And if you look at the images of the Jews, Jewish men, Jewish women, children who were burnt alive, it's imagery that's worse than the most graphic imagery that you'll read in Eicha or Yirmiyahu. Unless you think that this Eis Tzara, this sense of urgency or crisis, is behind us, then pay careful attention to the northern border of Israel with Hezbollah. Pay close attention to the violence in Yehuda and Shomron, where 2 million Arabs have the potential to rise up against not just the Jewish Yishuvim there, but also against the main part of Israel. And pay careful attention to the warnings that come out of Iran and Yemen. I don't think the United States sends two aircraft carrier strike groups to the Middle East just for fun. I think there's a real sense that there's darkness on the horizon, darkness that has the power not only to kill thousands of Jewish lives, but to undermine the very safety and security and even existence of the modern state of Israel. When we face a moment of crisis like this, I'm just going to briefly sketch the two different dimensions of the halachic response. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. Just want to mention it very quickly. And for our purposes today, I think it's really important to emphasize that each of these is separable from the other. One is, and this is what you've all been inundated with from YU and from most Jewish institutions, is the dinim that the Rambam quotes in Hilchos Tanis and that the Gemara quotes in Maseches Tanis. About Kisavo Mochama Va'artzechem Altsar Hatzoreschem Va'arioson Bachatzotzros. That's the chiyuv to blow shofar, blow the chatzotzros, call out in tshuva, do tshuva, call out in za'aka, in a special tefillah, to do tshuva, to cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that we should be saved. That's one element of the response. And I think that's the element that most of us have been bombarded with, especially from the rabbinic leadership here at Yeshiva University. I think that's a really important aspect of the response, but it's only one aspect. I think equally important, if not more important, is not the halachos that appear in Hilchos Tanis, but the halachos that appear in Hilchos Melachim Umochamos, the laws that also appear in Masachas Sota. The Rambam writes in the fifth chapter of Hilchos Melachim that there's a category of Mechemes Mitzvah, one of which is triggered by Ezras Yisrael Miyad Sar Shebo Aleim, that there's a duty to go out to battle, to fight an enemy that comes and attacks the Jewish people. We don't need to learn the sugya now. It doesn't matter whether the Rambam's makar is the sugya in Erevin, the Bavli in Sota, or the Yushalmi in Sota. What's important is that, again, I think this is uncontroversial, and I think it's obvious that the most egregious attack against Jews in the land of Israel in our generation, and probably since the founding of the state, triggers that din of Mochemes Mitzvah of Ezras Yisrael Miyad Sar Shebo Aleim. And if you think that that only binds Jews in Israel and not Jews in America to participate in the war effort, then you've simply confused your Judaism with the political entity that controls the state of Israel. The category of Mochemes Mitzvah is not a din for people who have citizenship in Israel. It's not a din in people who have enlisted with the IDF. It's a din that's obligatory on all Jews. And the Gemara in Sota teaches us, and the Rambam codifies this as well, that for a Mochemes Mitzvah, in contrast to a Mochemes Rishus, afilu chasan michedra v'kala michupasa, really every single member of the Jewish people is obligated to participate in the war effort. And that binds Jewry in America, it binds Jewry in Israel, it binds Jewry in Europe. Each person, filu chasan michedra and kala michupasa, is obligated to participate in the Mochemes Mitzvah in some way. And it's great if you're coming to stay there 15 minutes early. It's great if you're davening with more kavana. It's great if you're adding some tehillim to your davening. But that's only one piece. That's only the Hilchos Tanis piece of the response. It doesn't satisfy in any way the obligation of participating in the Mochemes Mitzvah. I'll talk at the end of my remarks today about how you could participate even if you're not trained to shoot an M16, or if you don't know how to shoot a Merkava tank. But I do think it's incumbent upon every Jew to participate in some meaningful way in this Mochemes Mitzvah. The Rambam writes that when someone's engaged in a Mochemes Mitzvah, so the din of Osek B'Mitzvah, Pater Menah Mitzvah kicks in. And that applies whether you're involved on the front lines, just like the Chayalim who are called up from Miluim service are Pater from, whether it's Kriya Shema, Tefillah, whatever they need to be exempt from because they're participating in the Mochemes Mitzvah. And it also applies, in my opinion, to people who are participating on the back lines, L'sapik Mayim U'mazon, to contribute to the war effort in whatever way they are. And I'm going to explain what those ways can be in a few minutes. The Karen Ora writes, commenting on that Gemara in Sota, that the din of Mochemes Mitzvah binds every member of the Jewish people, that even Talmidei Chachamim are obligated to participate and to leave behind their Talmud Torah to take up arms in the Mochemes Mitzvah. So I want to impress upon each and every one of you how important it is to get involved in some way. I want to move for a moment, and Romy, make sure I come back to this discussion about the L'sapik Mayim U'mazon, to understand what it is that Israel is fighting for. Like, what is the Mochemes Mitzvah that we Jews are participating in, or that we're engaged in? When I think about what's going on, I see three different wars that Israel's fighting. And I don't mean a war in Gaza, and a war in Yehuda v'Shomron, and a war in the north. I think there are just three dimensions to the actual Mochama that Jewry is engaged in right now. And I want to illustrate these three dimensions by speaking somewhat personally about my family's history, my family's connection to the state of Israel and to the land of Israel. Obviously, we all, you know, read the Pesukim in the Torah. We all travel to Israel. Israel is a major piece of life of Jewry in the 21st century. But I want to describe, just for a moment, the centrality of Israel to me and how it animates the DNA that courses through me. So my grandfather, my maternal grandfather, was born in Yerushalayim in 1922. And he was born there under the British mandate as a seventh generation Yerushalmi. So his family had been there for seven generations. They had come from Poland in the early 1800s, around the time when the Talmidim of the Gra started coming to Israel. Many Hasidim came around the 1840s. So his father's side had come from Karlin Stolen, and his mother's side had come as Lelever Hasidim. And they came to Israel simply because that was the aspiration of Jews over the century. They came as Hasidim who saw the significance of living in Israel, of doing mitzvos in Israel, and also an element of Yimos HaMashiach, that maybe the end of Jewry is destined to come and return to the Jewish homeland. My grandmother's story is very different. So my grandmother was born in 1935 in a shtetl in Eastern Europe called Eishishak. The Nazis invaded what was Lithuania and then occupied by Poland in World War II. And on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, they killed out her entire town. And she and her family escaped. They hid in the forest throughout the entire war. And they survived the war. It's a really remarkable story in and of itself. And after the war, they returned to their shtetl, to their town. And to put it mildly, the Poles, the Polish people who had taken over the Jewish homes and the Jewish businesses, were less than pleased that Jews were coming back to town and taking back their property and their businesses. So they basically launched a pogrom against the Jews who had just returned from the war. And if you know my grandmother's story, which she's written about, the Poles launched this attack against Jews. They hid in a closet. And to make a long story short, she sat there in the back of the closet as the Poles dragged out her mother and baby brother and shot them right in front of her. So while the Nazis came and destroyed her entire town, it was the Poles after the war who were displeased with Jews reclaiming their property in Eastern Europe that killed her mother and her baby brother. But there's a third layer of my grandmother's story. Her father, having witnessed the murder of his wife and child, organized with other men of the town to smuggle weapons into the shtetl to defend Jewish life in case the Poles would start up again. If you know the history of Poland after the war, the Soviets controlled Poland. Soviets didn't want there to be any Jewish resistance. They didn't want Jews to cause trouble or fight against the Poles. So they arrested the Jews of the town who had smuggled weapons in, and they sent my great-grandfather, my grandmother's father, to a Siberian labor camp where he stayed from after the war until 1957. So my grandmother, who was about 9 years old at the time, so I want to put this back into perspective, her town was murdered by the Nazis in the beginning of the war. Her mother was killed by the Poles in the years immediately after the war. And her father was taken to Siberia to a Soviet gulag because Jews weren't allowed to defend themselves from the Poles who were resisting Jews coming back to their old town. So orphaned effectively from her father and mother, she came to Israel in 1946, 2 years before the establishment of the state. And Israel gave her new life. She had no parents. She had a brother who survived the war with her, but she was basically on her own. And she was able to rebuild her life from living in Israel under the protection of the state of Israel. She changed her name. She was born Shana Sonnenzon. Shana in Hebrew, in Yiddish, means beautiful. She changed it to Yaffa, which is what we knew her as. And her brother, who was also Sonnenzon, their last name, which is Yiddish for son of the sun, they changed their last name to Ben Shemesh. And if you speak to my mother, she'll tell you that, you know, my grandmother growing up, she always thought my grandmother was Israeli. Like, she never really appreciated that she had lived this whole portion of her life in Eastern Europe. Because Israel took her in and allowed her to recreate her life against the destruction of the darkness of the Shoah. To me, these two different aspects of my family history frame two central elements of the importance of the state and land of Israel. On my grandfather's side, it's really just the aspiration of Jewry over the generations to return, to settle, to establish Jewish sovereignty in the land that was promised to our forefathers. That's the halacha that we read about several places in the Torah, but amongst them in Bamidbar Lamed Gimel, V'horashtem es ha'aretz v'yashavtem ba, ki lochem nasati es ha'aretz l'resh es osa. It's the birthright, it's the destiny of the Jewish people to return, to live, and to defend the borders of the land of Israel. The Ramban on the spot there in Bamidbar, and in his Asagos to the Rambam's count of the mitzvos, he says, this is the mitzvah saseh of, for all generations, that Jews have a duty, not just Jews who live in Israel, but world Jewry has a duty to defend the integrity of the land of Israel, to settle the land, and ensure that Jewish sovereignty controls the land. I'm going to read you the words of the Ramban in his Shikha Sa'asen Mitzvah Dalid. The Ramban writes, a mitzvah revius, shenitztavenu l'resha sa'ares, l'resha sa'ares asher nathan akel yisparach v'yis ala lavosenu, la'avram l'yitzhak l'yakov, b'lo na'azva b'yadzu lasenu min ha'umos o l'shmama. Not to let any other nation control or establish sovereignty of the land, or even to leave it barren. It's the mitzvah saseh incumbent upon all Jews. The Ramban adds, v'zuhi shechachamim korinosa mechames mitzvah. That's what Chazal mean when they refer to a mechames mitzvah. And the Ramban says that this is for all generations. Aval ha'aretz lo naniach osa biyadam v'lo biyad zulasa min ha'umos bidor min hadoros. For any generation and all time, it's the duty of Jewry not to let some other nation control the land of Israel. Ramban continues, Nitztavenu anachnu, lavo ba'aretz, v'lichvosh hamedinos, u'lohoshiv ba'shivtenu. I think that's one element, and let me read one more phrase. Im kein hi mitzvas ase ledoros, mischayev kol yachid mimenu, afilu bizman hagalos. Ramban's very clear that this is for all generations and all times. And when you listen to the chants, as I myself heard them chanted on the campus of University of Pennsylvania, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, where people are occupied, resistance is justified. I played the recordings to my own shir. That's the attempt of our enemies, sympathizers with Hamas, to undermine the claim of Jews to the land of Israel, and to resist this first element of the war that Israel is fighting. It's a war to defend the Jewish people's right to remain and live and control the land of Israel. But there's also a second element, a second front, a second dimension of the war that I think is captured by a different principle in halacha, and that is what we read in Sefer Vayikra, Lo Samod al Dam Reyecha, that when Jews are in trouble, in mortal danger, there's an obligation on all of us to come to their defense, to come to aid them, to save them from whoever it is that's trying to destroy them. And for me, this dimension is the dimension of my grandmother's story. The Jews lived for generations in Europe, in Eastern Europe. My grandmother's shtetl was around for 800 years. Very important yeshiva, a kollel there in Eishishak. And Jews weren't able to defend themselves from their enemies. My grandmother's town was destroyed by the Nazis. Her mother was killed by sympathetic Polish collaborators after the war. And Jews weren't allowed to defend themselves even after that by the Soviets who controlled that territory. And even just on that front of Lo Samar Al Dam Re'echa, that Jewry should be able to defend itself from anti-Semites and people who call for Jews to be killed, there's no institution, there's no entity in the world that's done more to protect Jewry across the world than the modern state of Israel. And whether that's Israel rescuing Jews in Arabic and Muslim countries, or Israel promising the law of return to give a safe haven to whichever Jew needs to take refuge there, Lo Samar Al Dam Re'echa, that's the second element of what Israel is fighting for, simply for the ability for Jewry to have its own army, to be able to protect its citizens, and to give a refuge against those people who would rather that our people not be around. I want to mention now, I want to turn now to the third element, the third dimension of the war. Let me just say, it should be clear to you that those first two elements are separable from each other. You could have Lo Samar Al Dam Re'echa anywhere in the world. I mean, it was equally true in Shushan as it was in Eastern Europe, as it was in Germany during their Crusades, wherever it may be. That's just saving Jewish lives, and it's Shu Alachas Kam V'Kam in the land of Israel. V'horashtem Es Ha'aretz V'yashavtem Ba is the second element to the war that's independent of the first. Even if no Jews were being threatened, there's a mitzvah saseh, there's a duty incumbent upon each Jew to make sure that Jews establish sovereignty in the land of Israel. Each of those stands independent of the other. Let me turn to the third dimension of the war as I see it. And that is that here it's not just Jews fighting to defend Jewry. It's not just Jews fighting to keep the land of Israel in our hands and under our control. But as the President of the United States said, it's really a battle of good against evil. And I think that's really not an understatement. You know, if you want to paint it in vivid terms, and you could think of something as epic as the battle for Middle Earth, just where evil rises under bad forces. There's a duty of the people who stand for what's good and what's right and what's true to fight that away. The Torah in Parshas Nitzavim says, "Reina sati lefanecha hayom es achayim v'es hatov v'es hamaves v'es hara." Human beings are endowed with bechira. And when you have Bechira, you could choose how you're going to live your life. You could choose what's Chaim and Tov, or you could choose the Maves and the Ra. And in those same psukim, we're told, HaChaim v'hamaves nasati lefanecha uvacharta b'chaim. And when you watch the images or the pictures of the massacre that took place in Israel, it should leave no doubt in your mind about the type of evil that faces us. Many, many times in the Torah we're told in Sefer Devarim, "Uvi'arta hara mikirbecha," that there's a duty to eradicate evil from your midst. And this is not just an obligation on the Shoftim and the IDF. Yad ha'edim tia bo barishona. Really, you just can't watch evil and let it get a foothold and let it get a stand. It's a moral, it's a legal obligation imposed upon us by the Torah to root out evil and to destroy it. Skim the psukim in Devarim and you'll see this time and time again. In Parshas Noach, which we just read, the Torah tells us, "Vatishachei sa'aretz lifnei Elokim, vatimalei ha'aretz chamas," that the world corrupted itself. And the very purpose of the world having been created was undercut. There's really no reason for this world to exist if it's dominated by evil and bad actors. And so before the Mabul, Hashem said, that's it. There's really no purpose. And Vatishachei Sa'aretz, Vayara Elokim Sa'aretz, V'hinei Nishchasa, Ki Hishchis Kol Basar Es Darko Al Ha'aretz. And so that's why Hashem decided that he's going to destroy the world. After the Mabul, we're told that Hashem makes a bris, and he's no longer going to be in charge of rooting out evil. He says this is given over to Noach and his family. Right after the Mabul, Noach's given a bracha, and he's told, Shofech dam ha'adam, ba'adam damo yishafech, ki betzelem elokim asa ha'adam. That when one human being spills another human being's blood, it's not just that person is supposed to be killed. It's ba'adam damo yishafech. What that means, the Mefarshim explain, is that it's humankind's responsibility to avenge the blood of the person who was killed by eradicating the murderer from the world. Shofech dam ha'adam, a person who spills another person's blood, ba'adam damo yishafech. It's mankind's responsibility to do justice, to root out evil. Why? Ki betzelem Elokim asa asa adam. And here the Mefarshim explain twofold. Number one, a person who wrongfully takes somebody else's life, they've shown that they don't have the type of Tzelem Elokim that they were created for. The Radak explains that if you could violate such a basic natural law command to not take somebody else's life, if you think there's something better about your life than some other innocent person, then there's no Tzelem Elokim that animates your mind. He says the Seichel is the home of the Tzelem Elokim. And clearly your Seichel is not properly functioning if you think you have the rightfulness, you have the entitlement to murder somebody else who has Tzelem Elokim. And that obligation to do justice is given over to humankind. Let's quote you the language of the Radak. Lefi shehu hishchis tzalmo tchila ba'avro mitzvah sa'el. The perpetrator corrupted his own Tzelem Elokim. V'hine ein Tzelem Elokim v'seichel la'over. Clearly that person who violates such a basic norm of man of humanity, they clearly don't possess that type of Tzelem Elokim. And therefore it's our responsibility, v'yarta hara mikirbecha, to not let that type of evil get a foothold. On this front, and we're also, by the way, going to read about next week's parsha in Lech Lecha about Sodom and Amorah, like a city that wasn't worthy of being kept alive because it stood for the type of evil that the Torah itself thinks shouldn't be allowed to exist. I think on this third front, on the Biyarta Hara Mikirbecha, the battle of good against evil, you could decide what falls in this category. You know, is it just good against evil? Is it people who celebrate death versus people who celebrate life? Is it people who seek truth versus those who revel in lies? And if you just want to see the types of lies that these enemies propagate, look at the coverage of the hospital attack in Gaza last week. I mean, there's... The European Union, I think, just said that maybe 50 people died in the attack. Every Western country said that there was a failed Palestinian rocket. But yet the Arab world continues to cry foul that this was Israel attacking them. So I think it's the good versus evil gets entangled also with MS versus Sheker and people who celebrate Maves versus people who choose Chaim. So I think on one level in this war, there's a duty that uviyarta hara mikirbecha, to make sure that evil doesn't get a foothold in the world. But I think there's a equally important dimension to the battle of good against evil, and that's to serve our responsibility to serve as agents of moral clarity. We say in our tefillos three times a day, Ata chonen la'adam das umelamed lanosh bina, that Hashem gives us knowledge and he gives humankind the power of understanding. And Chazal teach us that power of understanding manifests in the ability to distinguish. We say Havdalah in Ata chonen la'adam das. Say Mavdil bein kodesh l'chol, bein or l'choshech, bein yisrael l'amim. So having knowledge, having understanding, is the power to discern between lightness and darkness, what's kodesh and what's chol, what's good and what's evil. One of the first brachos you make in the morning is anosein lasech vibina lehavchin ben yom uvein laila. Gives the heart understanding to distinguish between day and night. In the very beginning of Bereishis, we read about vayavdel elokim ben or uvein achoshech vayaras or kitov. It's the power to distinguish between what's tohu vohu choshech al pnei tzohom and what is the things that are kitov. What are the things that are good? What are the things that are right? And I think when you look around, when I look around at my peers on secular college campuses at Penn, at Columbia, when you look around at many of the world leaders, I see, I think many of us see, a basic inability to distinguish between Or and Choshech. It really just boggles the mind from my perspective. I think many people, even amongst the Jewish community, are sometimes persuaded by counter narratives that seek to blur the distinction between who's fighting for Tov and who's fighting for Ra. I think part of the obligation of Jewry is to stand for moral clarity. I mean, many universities are more than happy to condemn Israel in the same breath that they'll condemn the Hamas violence. And if that's acceptable to you, Shai, if that's acceptable to you, that's your university does, then I think you haven't... Well,
I'm not impressed with my university.
Not impressed with your university. it's a lack of atachonin l'adam das. And it's our responsibility to fight the fight lehavdil bein oru bein achoshech. And I think it's incumbent upon everyone to use their voice to make that point. It's not just Jews who are obligated to do this. I think it's incumbent upon anybody who has a sense of goodness in humanity to do that. If you're following the backlash against college, against America's elite universities, it's not just Torah observant Jews like David Magerman who are getting up there and saying that I will no longer support Penn or other universities that are unable to condemn Hamas as evil, but it's non-Jews like the Huntsman family who say that these are not the values of the university that raised me 30 years ago. And in Huntsman's case, this is somebody who celebrated the fact that he, you know, is non-political on the American front. You know, he served under Republican administrations, Democratic administrations. But if these institutions are unable to distinguish between good and evil, then they're complicit in continuing to propagate a world that's kihishchis kol basar es darko ala aretz. I want to go back for a second. So Romy, this is the reminder that you're supposed to give me. Well, yeah. And just emphasize the different ways that we can participate in this Mechames Mitzvah. So I'm just going to reiterate, there's really no doubt in my mind that if ever there was an obligation upon us to participate in a Mechames Mitzvah, that time is now. Surely the worst attack against Jews of this Yovel, maybe even more than this Yovel, maybe the worst attack against Jews in Israel since the Churban HaBayis, if you're limited to the land of Israel itself, with the evil that was perpetrated. This is the Mechames Mitzvah of Ezras Yisrael Miyad Tzar Shebo Aleihem. And I think each of these elements, each of these three elements that I just delineated, is sufficient to be a call to action. Alachas kam v'kama, when all three of them, lo samar al dam reyecha, v'yirashtem es ha'aretz, v'yarta haram mikirbecha, are compounded together in a single battle that's come to a head right now, right before us. I mentioned that I think this obligation is incumbent upon all of Jewry. Every now and then, Chazal teach us that the Urim B'tumim would light up for the Kohen Gadol. I think you could look at Psukim in the Torah that light up to give us guidance for our generation. And one of the psukim that lights up to my mind, lights up to me, is the psukim that we read about in Parshas Matos, in Bamidbar Lamed Beis. We, American Jewry, are like B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven and Chatzi Shevet Menashe. Most of B'nai Israel, or half of B'nai Israel, parts of B'nai Israel, have gone to settle the land of Israel. And we saw the Eiver HaYarden, and we want to settle there. That's fine, for now. Maybe it's not fine for now. History will tell us. But remember that when B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven wanted to settle Eiver HaYarden, Moshe Rabbeinu turns to them and he says, Ha'achichem yavo la'mochama ba'atem teshvu po. Will your brothers go out to fight and you'll stay here in the Eiver HaYarden? And we know that they committed lo nashuv el bateinu ad hisnachel b'nei Yisrael ish nachal asel. The famous Tznai b'nei Gad b'nei Reuven. It's probably a poignant fact about most of the people in this room that you know more about the Choshen Mishpat Din of Tznai b'nei Gad Reuven than the actual substance of the commitment. The substance of the commitment was lo nashuv el bateinu ad hisnachel b'nei Yisrael ish nachal asel. And Moshe Rabbeinu reminds them, "V'imlo sasu kein, hinei chatasem laHashem, udu chataschem asher timtza aschem." The duty is incumbent upon the entire B'nai Israel. It's nothing to do whether you live in the present borders of Israel or you have Israeli citizenship. The call to action of the Mochemes Mitzvah is ha'achichem yavo l'mochama, will your brothers and sisters go out to fight? V'atem teshvu po. Now, as I said earlier, most of you probably couldn't fight for Israel if you wanted to. You're not trained. The Israeli military wouldn't take you. It's probably not a good use of your talents to get on a plane and just wander the streets of Israel, dropping off more socks and underwear for Israeli troops, or even dropping off more food than troops could use. But we know that there's an equal duty to participate in the war effort from the back lines. We know this from two places. The Radvaz tells us, when the Gemara tells us for Mochemes Mitzvah, everyone's obligated to participate, afilu chasam mechedro v'kala mechupasa. He says, even if women aren't obligated to fight on the front lines, because kolkudabas melech pnima, which itself seems to be a debate within the Rishonim whether women should go out to the front lines. He says, b'mochemes mitzvah hanashim hayu misapkos mayim u'mazon lebaleihem. They would support the war effort from the back lines, providing food to the front lines, fixing munitions, letaken kli mochama. And it's that sense in which they're obligated. And that's equally true, the Rashi tells us in Parshas Ki Tsetzeh, Pasuk Chaf Dalid. Somebody who can't participate in the war effort, the Torah distinguishes between someone who's exempt lo yetzeh batzava and someone who's lo yavar alav l'chol davar. And the Mefarshim, Rashi, the Medrash, they all say that even someone who can't participate in Yetzei Atzava, Rashi is a quote from Rashi, Misapkin Mayin Mumazon Umitaknin Asadrachim. And other Rishonim say, Mitaknin Klei Milchama. There's a way to participate from the back lines. So what does that mean for all of us sitting in the room? So I think there are three things that everyone here could be involved in varying degrees. I understand you guys are young and pretty much worthless for most things. It was a joke. But I think there are different ways that you could be involved. So one is contributing financially. I know that most of you are not wealthy, but contributing financially to the needs of people in Israel right now, really any amount is important to participate in some way. There's needs of people who have been displaced from their homes. There's needs of hospitals. There's needs for victims who are injured and are going to live lives of trauma until they die. And even if you can't give right now, because probably a lot of people are giving and you may not have access, but give something and commit yourself to giving something in the future. There's a tremendous outpouring right now from the American Jewish community I think that's a crucial way of supporting the war effort. I myself have pledged $18,000 to a fund that I'm involved with. Shai's dad is involved with it. And I think the order of magnitude that you're supposed to give is the opportunity cost of what, I guess you guys don't make, you guys are worthless. That's true. So we'll hold off on this. Get back to me when you have an internship and we'll talk. But contribute in some way that's meaningful to you. Maybe at your stage it's just symbolic, but you should contribute something. I will say the outpouring from the American Jewish community is extraordinary. I mean, the people that I'm involved with, like, people are just writing $100,000 checks to institutions that need it in Israel, really without limits. I think there's a way that you all could be involved in a different way. Chazal say that tzedakah is b'mamono, but gemilas chasadim is begufo. There's a way that you could be involved begufchem. Number one, and I'll end in 4 minutes. Number one is I think that this is really a moment of destiny for American Jewry. If you read David French's column in the New York Times, he was involved in the U.S. attack on Mosul. And his point is that Israel, unlike the United States is an independent military superpower and economic power, which means that when the United States wants to wage war, it could do so on its time schedule at the rate that it wants to do it. There are no barriers to the United States waging war. Israel's a dependent military and it's a dependent economy, meaning that Israel can't fight a war without the backing of the United States financially and geopolitically, and it's going to be able to launch the war only at the timetable that the United States and the European Union allows it to. You see this already now with the influence that America wields over Israel. I think it's a moment of destiny for American Jewry. Whatever little tzedakah you'll give and the Balabatim will give, it's really negligible in relation to the huge amount of financial and military aid that the United States government is giving to Israel. And each of you is an equal constituent, one person, one vote in the United States of America. Yoni, you might be useless if you're a Canadian citizen, but you're a dual citizen. Okay, so then you're helpful. Each of you is an equal constituent in the United States of America, and it's the most important thing that you could do is to tell your representatives, tell the White House that you want them to continue to support Israel. I mean, your voice really matters. And part of that is going to rallies to show that American Jewry supports Israel. All of those things, being involved in the public opinion in America so that the government sees that it's important to support Israel, that's way more consequential than flying to Israel to distribute stuff to soldiers or even taking an M16 and going to fight with Israel. And if you just look, there's an unending supply of American Hercules planes flying to Israel to drop off munitions and other supplies for the war effort. And the billions of dollars that the United States is giving is probably the most important thing that you can be involved in. And the United States sending the strike groups to the Middle East, those are really important aspects of your involvement in supporting the war effort to Israel through the support of the United States of America. I want to mention one last piece where you could all be involved in, and I think this is really important as well. We're lucky that the President of the United States is a longtime friend of Israel. Somebody quipped to me that we're lucky that Joe Biden has no short-term memory. He only has long-term memory because he forgot that the Democrats aren't supposed to be friendly to Israel. This guy said it as a joke. It was a clinical assessment. It was a joke. I don't agree with the content of the joke. But the point is that Joe Biden, the President of the United States, is an aberration in the political climate, especially amongst the young Democratic Party, thanks to Ezra's representatives in Congress. which means that the unequivocal support that Biden is giving to Israel, both militarily and financially, it's almost like a piece of hashkacha that we got lucky with and that he ran to Israel's aid without batting an eyelash, immediately and unequivocally. It's not clear that that's going to continue in 30 years, 40 years, depending on what type of public support there is in the public opinion for the state of Israel. You see it shifting on college campuses. You see anti-Semitism getting a stronger foothold in New York, in the United States, in Congress. And I think it's our responsibility in the sense of Havdil ben Kodesh l'chol ben or l'choshech. I think we are tasked with fighting the PR battle to make the best case that we can to support Israel on the international front for like the world to see, and especially for our fellow Americans to see. And if you have coworkers or you have friends who aren't as supportive or are not supportive of Israel, it's your responsibility to continue to influence public opinion in Israel's favor and to make the best case, the best moral case possible in Israel's favor. I think that's a hugely important front about the battle that's going on right now. And for you guys, that's Lo Bashamayim. You know, there's a guy in my community, J.J. Kimchi, I don't know if some of you know him, PhD student at Harvard, wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, just kind of criticizing Harvard's response, defending Israel. All of you could be involved in that. It's really not a difficult thing to do. Really, beficha v'vavcha la'asoso. If you had an internship and your employer didn't put out a statement that was strong enough condemning Hamas, condemning evil, it's your responsibility to speak up. I don't remember if I mentioned this to my shir, but I think each time we don't speak up and people fail to support Israel in the communities that we're in, we help normalize the anti-Israel rhetoric that's become more entrenched and more allowed in the United States. I think I gave the example, did I give this example to the guys in cheer with my class in Columbia years ago? No? So years ago when I graduated college, I did a master's at Columbia, and I was sitting in this class, you know, I was like, you guys, once upon a time, all my experience was YU, and a little more YU, and a little more YU, and a little more YU, and then some MTA even, and some Gush. So I was sitting there in this class in Columbia, it was a philosophy class, and the professor, she's talking about the problem of evil, and the example that she gave of like evil perpetrated in our day was, she's like, most of us we don't encounter evil face to face, but there are Palestinians languishing in Israeli prisons who really suffer from like evil perpetrated against them. And I was like so caught off guard, like what do you, I wasn't really expecting that in my years of experience in the YU, MCA, Gush world. And like what are you supposed to say? I'm supposed to fight Israel's battles here in a classroom of like 50 undergraduate kids. I'm going to get up here and say like that's a despicable thing to say. I'm going to take my laptop and walk out. And I didn't. And I sat there and I was wearing a yarmulke. And like she got away with saying it. And I think when I look back to that moment, I think I was over on what the Rambam says, that in a milchama, there's a prohibition of al yerach levavchem. It's usher to be intimidated. It's usher to be afraid when you're confronting the enemy. And the Rambam says that somebody who is afraid and doesn't have the courage to fight, or in this case, to speak up, kol d'mei Yisrael tluyim b'tzavaro, the blood of all of Jewry is on your neck. Because as little by little you normalize and you allow for that type of rhetoric to take root, you allow the world to congregate against Achenu B'nai Yisrael. And then they won't support Israel in moments like these. And then really genuinely, Kol D'mei Yisrael Tluyin B'Tzavaro. And the Rambam says, V'im lo asa milchama b'chol libo b'chol nafsho, harei ze k'misha shafach d'mei akol. Ad kedei kach, I think each time you speak up and each time you participate, the fate of Jewry really hangs on our necks. I want to conclude with the following thought. Two thoughts. Number one, I think this mindset of being involved in the Mochames Mitzvah is so important that if I were the chief rabbi of the United States, I'd make a takana that we should all walk around in Israel's olive green fatigues, so long as the Milchama is being waged. Just like Zelensky, when he represents Ukraine overseas, he wears the fatigues to show that they're a nation at war. And that's where Jewry is right now. That's the mindset that we should all be in. I'm going to conclude with the following thought. We, for the last couple of weeks, I think most of us really have nothing but tears. And I'm consoled somewhat by the words of Shir HaMaalos, B'Shuv Hashem Eshivas Tzion. We say, Hazorim Bedima Barina Yikzoru. Really, the last 3 weeks have been part of Zorim Bedima. And as the darkness looms on the horizon, it's going to continue to be Zorim Bedima. But soon, hopefully, we'll be able to merit Barina Yikzoru. That which we invest in tears and with blood, we'll harvest in joy. My grandmother, who I mentioned at the beginning of my remarks today, whose town was murdered by the Nazis, whose mother was killed by the Poles, and whose father was taken to a Soviet labor camp because Jews weren't allowed to defend themselves, when she wrote about the Holocaust in her book, Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust, moments of triumph, of religious dignity in the depths of the darkness of the concentration camps, she would inscribe the book to whoever she gave it to. And I have two copies of that book. One she inscribed, Me'at Or Me'achoshech HaGadol, a little light from the great darkness. In the second copy that I have, she inscribed it, Me'at Or Doche Harbe Choshech. Not just a little light from the great darkness, but a little bit of light has the power to push away much darkness. And that's what we're fighting for right now. We daven every morning, Or chadash al tzion tayir, v'nizke chulanu mehera la'oro. May we be zoche to fight, to build a civilization that's a beacon of light, and merit that Or chadash al tzion tayir, v'nizke chulanu mehera la'oro.